Welcome to episode 8 of Fresh Out of Tokens. I am one of your hosts, Tanya, aka Cypher of Tyr. And as always, I will not hog the mic and let my illustrious co-host introduce himself.
I am David. I'm known on Twitter as Red Conversation. I'm pretty easy to find. I'm also here, so that helps.
Yes, you're here. And, you know, tweeted us both. We probably spend far too much time on Twitter between the podcast account and our own accounts. And we are very, very excited to have with us this week Sylvia Monreal, also known as Como Se Dice Nerd on Twitter. So Sylvia, do you want to say hi?
Hi. Hey, y'all. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Yay. I'm
looking
stoked.
Forward to it.
Yes. So very brief notes or minor housekeeping for this episode. Just a reminder that we are now part of the Geeked FM network, along with Geeks with Sneaks, Chromatic Life, and More Than Bits podcast. So if you wander over to geek.fm, you can check out episodes there, but also on our own link at freshoutoftokens.simplecast.fm. And we have merchandise, which is at the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt shop. And anything purchased is helping our friend of the show, Chachi Bobinks, who did our logo and Twitter header. So if you need artwork like that, please hit her up over on Twitter at Chachi Bobinks, or buy a t-shirt or mug and help us keep the show on the air. Because, you know, while podcasting is awesome, it is not free. And with that, we're going to actually just jump right into questions, because we actually have listener questions, and I'm super excited, because I am, like, it's the only second time that we got questions from listeners. But Sylvia, you are a gamer, and that makes me very excited. So, as you know, this is the question I want to ask everyone who comes on and is a fellow gamer. What got you into it?
Yeah, I love that question. I think knowing my parents' parenting style, they must have read an article somewhere that said that if your kids play games or have a computer, they'll be smarter, because they always made sure we had a computer or a console in our house. Like, I cannot remember a time where I wasn't interested in games. I tried to remember my earliest gaming memory, and I think it was this floppy disk game called, about Winnie the Pooh and the 100 Acre Wood, where you just like click around and find all of his friends. And it was actually a little scary because, like, I don't know, the way floppy games looked, it was a little like a horror movie. But that was my earliest memory, or Excite Bike on the regular Nintendo. Like, that's how long I've been gaming. And I must have been like 6 years old when those started. I don't think I even had like fine motor control before I started gaming.
Oh, wow, Excite Bike. I haven't heard that in so long.
Yeah, I remember that because a lot of my gaming memories are associated with my sister being mad at the game. So that was one of those games that got a lot of frustration out of her.
Wow.
Thinking about it now, it's all of those old, those games you played at school, so many of them were terrifying. I remember I had to play it. I remember when I was little playing a game where you had to do math problems to rescue monsters from other monsters. It was weird.
Yeah, so much pressure for such a young person.
Oh my god.
That was an epic interlude.
Yes, that is a wonderful segue for the next question.
I was actually going to ask, sorry, someone called my phone.
It's okay.
When did you start to realize that the people in video games most of the time didn't look like you as a woman of color?
Yeah. So just to complicate that, actually, a lot of people in games look like me because I'm very light skinned. I'm passing. I was very assimilated into American culture by my family and, you know, the world around me. I think, though, I did realize early on that even though ostensibly I fit into this culture and this world, it wasn't made for me. My parents made sure me and my sister knew really early on that the world was not going to be welcoming to us, because we were the children of immigrants. We were women. We were Hispanic. They were just real upfront about everything's going to be a little bit harder because of that. So I kind of I wasn't shocked when games also weren't made for people like me. You know, the history books weren't made for people like me. School, work, everything else was made for someone else. Why not video games? A positive note, though, was that when I, just a few years ago, when I was playing Red Dead Redemption for the first time, is when I realized that it didn't have to be that way. And that's when I started pushing back on this lack of representation for Latinos, women, just really anyone else but the norm that we see in other video games. For the most of my life, I just accepted it as the norm. And once I played that game for the first time, like, my eyes kind of opened up to being like, oh, you can show other stories and still have, like, a pretty typical video game experience. Like, it actually could be better for having a variety of stories in it.
What was it exactly about that game?
Yeah. So I grew up in the Southwest, so I really responded to the depiction of, like, the desert, the lifestyle of the desert, sort of the mentality of the Southwest, where I know we see a lot of horrible Western stereotypes, like the crazy lone gunman. I shouldn't say crazy. The socially antisocial lone gunman person in the West. But there's this other side where you respect nature. You have, like, an introversion, and it's not strange for you to be introverted. You just have, like, a rich internal life because there's nothing else around you. You're in the middle of a desert. So seeing that setting really opened my eyes. And then seeing how easily the main character just goes into Mexico, and it's not a big deal. These aren't, like, gangsters or villains. It's just another set of characters that he encounters. And in that set, there was a lot of really interesting depictions. I think Luisa...
Yeah, so they just assume that people live there.
Yeah, right. Isn't that radical? that you can have
Mexico
living?
Oh my god.
Yeah, they just walk around saying standard NPC things too. They don't have to speak with, like, exaggerated accents or just going around calling everyone vato or whatever. They were just people. And I was going to say, Luisa is one of his main contacts, the main character's main contacts in Mexico. And I just was fascinated with her, like, how, as beautiful as Red Dead Redemption is for me, like, how much better would it be if it was about Luisa and her story, being a young woman fighting for her country, doing what she loves, doing what she thinks is right. Like, how much cooler would this be if it was just about her? And it was so close. I could taste what that game would have been like. And that's really what made the scales fall from my eyes and be like, oh, I might not be represented in games, but I don't have to be not represented in games. I could be represented in games.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I have. Oh, go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
Oh, I've had to, like, comb through a bunch of Westerns recently for something I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed that the only time that they even usually talk about Mexico outside of, like, bandits and so on is with the Mexican Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time they really tend to treat Mexicans as actual people who figure into the plot, but only because maybe they're also fighting Mexicans.
Yeah. It's definitely, much as I just gushed over Red Dead Redemption, it still has a ton of flaws, but it was definitely the first step in a good direction for me.
Oh, wow. Well,
I was about to say that's a pretty good segue into Tanya's question. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We'll figure out our segues eventually. But, you know, since you brought up, you know, characters and Latinos and Latinas, I wanted to talk about the list that you've got going with not just Latinos and Latinas in games as characters, but also people that are working in games. And I really love to know, like, kind of what led you to create the list, and if you want to talk a little bit about how it's grown.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I would love to. Before I get there, I should probably talk a little bit about where the Twitter account itself came from.
Uh-huh.
So there's this amazing podcast called Latino USA. If you haven't heard it, please pause this podcast, download all those episodes, and listen to it.
I would recommend they do that after this podcast.
Of course. And then come back to this after you listen to this episode and rate it and give them feedback, of course. But they had a series on diversity and geekdom by one of their producers, Daisy Rosario. And one of the interviews she did in that series was mentioning how the internet is you know, breaking down all these barriers, and it's so much easier for people of color to find themselves in geekdom. And I was so inspired by that that I ran over to my computer and I Googled Latino nerds. Like, oh yeah, I'll find my people. It'll be awesome. And if you do that, the first page is just all these articles from like 2011 about, did you know Latinos can be nerds too? Like, it was such a it was such a basic conversation that was very disappointing. And I wanted something that just put me in touch with people like me that had the same interests as me. And in the absence of that, that's what drove me to create this Twitter account. It's less about me creating my own stuff and more about me just putting a list together, honestly, of click who I follow, click who follows me, and there you go. There's Latino nerds. Go have fun. And that was the spirit behind the list I now have on Tumblr, where I'm trying to collect games that show depictions of Latino characters, games that show Latin America just as a setting, and ideally there would be much more emphasis on people creating their own games or people developing other games. But that is super hard to do, though. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to get on this podcast and get the word out, is if you are a Latino nerd working on something, let me know, because I would love to sing your praises and put your name out there.
Awesome.
I think we'd also love to hear about that.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Because what's kind of funny is, I'm doing a talk in a couple weeks, and I actually kind of Googled for a list of Black video game characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I found a list on Wikipedia. And as long as games have been around, just take a wild guess how many characters total were on that list.
Hmm. I'll say, just because of fighting games, maybe like 40.
Close. Well, there's more than that, but it's like, you know, literally counting every minor character that has ever like appeared in a game, it looks like. Whoever put this Wikipedia list together, there's like 192 out of the 30 years of gaming. And this is not, you know, main characters. This is like, hey, there was a brown person we can identify in the background. We're going to count them.
Yeah. Wow, gosh. Yeah, I wonder if they filter that by who actually speaks and then like who actually influences the plot versus who is actually like in your party, not even main characters. I wouldn't even go that far in filtering the list down, how big that number would be.
Yeah, because there's been a Tumblr post starting at FemHype. I think it was at FemHype where I last saw it, about how many Black, or was it Black characters or women of color that were leads, and it was only 14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that too. I think it was just, not just, but it was about Black characters, and that still included like fighting game characters who by default are not really speaking and influencing a plot in any significant way.
Yeah, so it's really discouraging to, you know, have been part of gaming culture for so long and to see, wow, that's all we get.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I'm so excited for the list, and we've signal boosted it over at I Need Diverse Games, and hopefully once people hear this podcast, there'll be a lot more people to add to that list, and we can circulate it around.
Yeah, I hope so too. I think sometimes when people point out those representations of characters of color in games, they always do it as like a gotcha moment. Like if you ever say, you know, I don't want to play games about angsty white guys, inevitably, one person will be like, well, there's this one game that doesn't have an angsty white dude in it. You're just not looking hard enough. And I would love to like take that impulse and use it for good, you know, and put instead like, hey, if you're interested in maybe designing your game in a Latin American country, here's a list of games that you could reference or start from. You don't have to comb through the abyss that is the internet to find these examples to start from. Like, I think we could harness that energy for good. I'm hoping that we could make something nice come of that impulse.
I believe so.
Yeah, I hope so too. I too have to resist the urge to be like, but only 97% of Western culture is made for me.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's so much that could be done if we just recenter the conversation and just celebrate what could be there, as opposed to like trying to continually, gotcha, you're wrong, or you forgot this one specific example. Like, that conversation only gets you so far. I think if we frame it instead as like, here's a resource for you to use for your studies or your own development or even just your own curiosity, here's a place you could turn to.
Yeah, well, I've actually had friends recommend things, and when they're listing reasons why it should be played, it'll be something like, and the protagonist is a woman of color, because I don't know if that's because it's novel, which is awful, or just because they're social justice Twitter people.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a little bit of both. Like, they aren't mutually exclusive things.
Yeah.
I do like that idea of it being novel, because especially if you've been playing games for 20 years, like I have, like, I kind of want it to stay interesting. I don't want to outgrow this hobby. I need something that keeps pulling me back in. And right now, what keeps pulling me back in to new and exciting areas of games is looking for depictions of Latino characters or Latin America. Like, I just found this nice little series of art games, which, of course, the names are escaping me. Like, Ernesto is a tiny little game that I never would have found if I wasn't Googling every day Latino characters, Latino developers, indie games by Latino developers, like every combination of words. And that game totally killed an afternoon for me. It was a lot of fun, and I never would have found it if I wasn't seeking out specifically a game that featured or was by a Latino person.
True.
That makes sense. On the note of novelty, this is a little off topic, but I don't think I've brought this up in a proper discussion because it sounds awful, but...
Ooh, I'm interested.
Dear.
Did you watch the Supergirl pilot?
I saw the trailer of it.
Yeah,
I didn't know the
pilot. That's enough information. The recasting of Jimmy Olsen was genuinely surprising to me. And I was just like, oh, that's awesome, because I don't get to be surprised by DC Comics properties that often.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I think that's the appropriate response to him being, you know, a black guy now.
Yeah, yeah, because he, I mean, all due respect to his character, not the most exciting character in comic book fiction, right? And I appreciate at least that there's something new about it. And because I always view my media with like a critical eye, like, what does it say about this show, which might otherwise be forgettable, not memorable, that they've made this casting decision? Like, how does that influence the conversation? Like, we could probably speak the whole episode about that one change, whereas before we'd be like, Supergirl, okay, bye. We've seen it. People have said what there is to say about it.
You mean like Spider-Man?
Yeah, oh gosh. My gosh, that broke my heart, because I was so... I like, the tiny idealist inside me was like, oh my gosh, Miles Morales will be beautiful on the big screen. Like, all the little boys that would dress up as Miles Morales watching that show, I just got caught up in that dream, and they dashed it. They dashed my hopes.
I had a completely different response that I think leads to the same place. It was more pragmatic in that I think Miles Morales would be more interesting because we've already had two recent Peter Parkers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just think it might, you know, be more easier to sell in that it would be interesting.
Yeah, I think I saw on Twitter someone saying, like, you could only watch Uncle Ben die so many times before it just stops mattering. And that's a horrible thing to do to that character, to make us not care about him anymore.
The worst thing is that I actually really liked Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man, because he would just, like, shut down. Like, he has this social anxiety because, you know, being nerdy isn't enough anymore.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is just the definitive way to do that character for this decade. So going somewhere else would have just been a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll be taking a pass on the next Spider-Man, because I think I actually fell asleep in Ultimate Spider-Man 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, been there, done that. Can we try something new this time?
In an ideal world, if you had, like, say, unlimited funds and power, what kind of heroes would you like to see more of, or would you create?
I would love... I'm just, like, enjoying the idea of me having unlimited power for a second. Like, just drinking in how that feels. But more seriously, I think I'm biased. I would definitely want to continue this representation of Latinos and Latino characters. And I think a good place to start is our own history and our own cultural history. The conversation about Latino identity in the U.S. is sometimes gets really stuck in this basic place where we're just constantly proving the reality of our existence. Like, we spend so much time just trying to get people to see Latinos. If I had unlimited time and money, I would just skip us to level 30 of that conversation where we finally get to talk about how the term Latino is actually kind of ridiculous because there's so many different types of people and cultures and nations wrapped up in there. So even just making games about, like, so Aritana and the Harpy's Feather was a game that really impressed me, even though it's kind of the same platformer you could see anywhere. But because they centered it on a different folklore and a different mythology, it looks completely different than anything else out there. They centered it on the myths of indigenous Brazilian people. Totally different game now. And Guacamelee is kind of the same way, where, you know, they did some novel stuff, but it's a pretty familiar game, and they just centered it in this sort of cartoony Mexican imagery, and it's completely different. So I would use my limited powers and funds to do a lot of things, but also just let us make games about different stories, like just feature different stories. The stories are out there. I'm sure there's plenty of people that would make them if they just had the time and the money and someone to believe in them and let them do that. Hopefully that makes sense.
Oh, it makes total sense.
I have built most of my worldview around that most people would do that if they could.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could be really beautiful. I mean, that's part of the struggle I'm seeing now as I do more research into the Latin American video game development scene, is that there's just such a struggle to even get started. That industry is non-existent or in its infancy, or even just the hobby itself is such a struggle to get into. There's such a high barrier for entry in video games in some countries still. I'm thinking about my own cousins in El Salvador. When I was in playing PlayStation 1, they were just getting started on the Sega that we had mailed to them like 3 years ago. That sometimes it's just as simple as building up the industry and letting it flourish. Like, and that could change so much of how video games look.
Cool. Well, speaking of how video games look, other than, you know, spreading the list, which will be linked in the show notes, and contributing if they are, you know, game devs or talking about games as a Latino, Latina person, what else can listeners do to bring awareness for Latinos and Latinas in gaming, be it journalism, making games, being in games?
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Okay, Sylvia, just solve everything wrong with video game culture right now.
We can do it.
Yeah, I believe. I think a good start would be finding safe spaces for us. It's really hard to find a safe space, period, in video game culture, especially if you come from a marginalized background. But once you find that space, it's very, very freeing. And it can really inspire you to do so much more and to start to change the conversation. So I think the first step is building safe spaces for Latinos, supporting them, protecting them. And then once we have that space, we can build each other up. Like, some people, somewhere out there, there's a brilliant a video game critic, and they just don't know it yet because we need to, like, find them and protect them and build them up and let them know that this is, you could use your voice in this way, and they might not be hearing that yet. So they might not ever hear it because of the way our society is structured right now. So I think building that safe space and then really encouraging each other, I've been really heartened by what I see as a recent shift in the conversation around video game culture, where instead of putting all the focus on the haters, we're spending our energies on promoting each other and inviting each other, making our own spaces to find each other and promote each other.
Awesome. So, yeah, so we have to work on that. So once we're done recording, I'll be hitting you up going, so, collaboration, we need to do that.
Yeah, I think that would be great. I mean, I'm toying around with the idea of, I came from, my old job was all about promoting activities during Hispanic Heritage Month, which is September. Mm-hmm. And for a long part of my life, I was like, Hispanic Heritage Month, totally lame. But I'm coming around to the idea of rallying around a place. And like, it would just be so cool if the nerds that identify as Latino use that month for our own purposes, like a game jam or articles focused on Latino characters in gaming, or just rallying around a hashtag. Like, we're here. Let's find each other. It's okay.
I know that, I just totally flubbed that line because apparently I'm trying to create a blooper reel. And I also got distracted by cat, because I am two, and if there's nudes of a cat anywhere.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I'm like, cat? You said cat? I'm two. I have no shame. There's cute animals involved.
We recently got these two kittens, and our house is strewn with like little balls with bells in them, and sometimes they run into one, and then they're going to spend 10 minutes doing that.
Oh, no, it's fine. I have a cat. I was just like, tinkly noise. What's that?
Yeah, something shiny's happening.
Yes, because, you know, I'm probably a cat as well. But I am not going to hog the mic anymore talking about cats and let David get in the next question.
Where were we?
Geek Girl Con.
You are also involved in Geek Girl Con, so what can you tell us about that?
Sure, I would love to tell you all about it. For those who haven't heard of this wonderful, wonderful place yet, Geek Girl Con is a convention that's all about celebrating and honoring the legacy of women's contributions to science, technology, comics, arts, nerddom, game design, gameplay. It is a 2-day event here in Seattle. Oh, October 10th and 11th? I feel like...
Yes, we're on a panel together. I hope we know when it is.
I know. I was doing so well. Like, I was rehearsing the... Like, I got to make sure to say legacy honoring, boom. And of course, I forget the dates. But long story short, it is just a really welcoming convention space. It's much smaller than some of the other geek conventions you might have heard of. It's not a San Diego Comic-Con. It's not even an Emerald City Comic-Con. But I think that's one of the great things about it. I went my first year moving to Seattle. I'm now on the volunteer staff, and I just love it. It's really welcoming. I've never been to a place where the creators and experts and voices in the field are so welcoming. Every panel I went to my first year, no matter what the subject was about, they were so welcoming, like not just talking about their expertise, but sharing their knowledge with you and making it, sharing how you can enter this field if you want to, or other ways that you could use this hobby and interest. And I just love that. I don't think that's something that we see too much of in geekdom, especially in our conventions. A lot of the conventions tend to be like, look at this super important person or this really famous person, which is fine. That's also very exciting. But I really like the refreshing change of, here's someone who's developing games talking about their process of how they think about designing games and showing you how you can use that process too. I really love that.
Awesome. Hmm. Yeah, I've never been to Geek Girl Con, so this will be interesting.
It's our 5th anniversary, so you've picked a really good year. There's going to be big stuff.
I thought I had something, but it's...
It's okay. I've got a question that apparently will have a very quick answer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This next question is fascinating. I've been reading about it on Wikipedia.
Okay. So I'm curious, because for your Twitter header over at Como Se Dice Nerds, you have America Chavez. And I just want to know if she's your favorite comic character, and if so, why?
Yeah, so I, disclaimer, comics are my, like, nerd blind spot. I can't justify buying them yet, although I'm trying to grow out of that hobby. I mean, she looks super cool. I was like, when I first started that account, I wanted to make sure that I had images of Latinos in geekdom. And she's cool, but also, isn't she actually technically like an alien or something? Like, isn't she not really human?
I don't know.
I'm on Wikipedia, so let me see.
That's as good a source as any, because I kind of fell off my comics wagon after a while, like getting really hardcore back into them and like, oh my god, I'm gonna go buy everything that my friends have recommended. And then my wallet was like, yeah, that's a nice idea, let's try not to do that.
Yeah.
This is her story is definitely a comic book story. Apparently she was raised by her mothers. She's human, but she was raised in a parallel dimension that's magic, so she got superpowers.
As you do. I mean, so, okay. Science.
Okay, then. I'm sure there's going to be someone who listens to this and tweets at us to tell us how incredibly wrong we are to not know everything about America Chavez.
There are a few more things I'd like to point out from what I'm reading.
Okay.
Let me see here. When the fictional island nation of Arcadia is attacked by a megalodon, Chavez throws the shark across the shield, the wall that separates Arcadia's borders, thus breaking the laws of King Doom. That is a real sentence that just happened.
Oh my gosh. What?
So is this King Doom as in Doom from, like, Fantastic Four? Like, Doctor Doom?
Apparently did he get it's just Doctor Doom. King? Yeah.
Kingship.
Okay.
Apparently she can also kick open holes in reality so she can travel through dimensions.
Yes.
But only through kicking for some reason, apparently.
Okay.
That is so freaking cool, though. I love that. See, this is why I picked her, because I knew she was just some random, sorry, not random, that sounds dismissive, but some random comic book character, but they still made her look like this Puerto Rican girl from New York, just kicking holes to reality. Like, I am here for that. I don't know everything about her, but I love that it looks like her and she's out there. And really what got me to her was seeing people cosplay as her, because those people look super cool. And that's what kind of piqued my interest in her imagery.
Cool.
It also says one of the storylines with her was written by G. Willow Wilson, who I really like her work. She does a lot of Miss Marvel, so it's nice. Probably well written.
Probably. Yeah, it sounds well, people are throwing sharks. That sounds like a well written story to me.
Yes. Now prepare for all of the tweets. Oh my god, I'm going to send you this comic so you can read it.
Please do. Okay, I will read it.
Yeah. If you want to send it to me, I will take that. That's a very productive comment.
Well, I always feel like when you say things, like if you're on a podcast or something and you say, well, I don't know about blah, 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 without fail, there is someone who will feel the need to educate you or go, oh my god, what do you mean you haven't read X? Here, I'm going to send you like at least one issue so you can find out about it. And I'm like, sure. If you want to, I won't stop you.
Yeah, I guess it's all in, like, the delivery, because that could be really condescending or really cool. Like, if they send you a comic, and they're like, you have to read this, it's so fun. Sure, I'll take that sort of education. But if it's, again, like, oh, you don't know anything, you don't deserve to be on a podcast, blah, 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 like, that's not productive. You know, you could do better things with your time than to give us that kind of feedback.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of was semi-griping about the lack of feedback since we've had a few episodes out. But, you know, if that's the kind of feedback we're going to get, I can live without it. So, dear listeners, if you have that kind of feedback, just do yourself a favor and don't.
Yeah, just read the comics that you like so much instead. That'll be more fun for you, more fun for us. Everyone's happy.
Yes. Yes, so we don't get totally off topic talking about, you know, the ways in which the internet can often fail us with, but actually commentary we often see online. I'm going to turn it back over to David.
Yeah, about that. Surely those people think they're educating us, and they are sometimes. How are you interested in, education equality and helping students of color in formal education?
Yeah, First of all, I love that transition.
Yeah. It was great. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Sorry, did I cut you off with my praise, though? Were you?
No, you can go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so my background, like, so by nights, I run this Twitter account about Latino nerds, but by day, I work in the nonprofit world. I started with a focus on education equity. I'm not as involved anymore as I like to be, but I still keep an eye on things, especially through the hashtag EduColor, EduColor, which is a fabulous hashtag. It's now a website with a newsletter. I highly recommend checking it out. That's run by teachers of color who, just like nerds of color, kind of have to take on that extra layer of responsibility that comes with, you know, proclaiming not just that you're a nerd, but you are a nerd of color. These teachers are doing the same. Like, what does it mean to be a teacher of color in the classroom in this society with all of its troubles? And like, what are the ways we could start to change the conversation? And they're, you know, to be cheesy, they're like real life superheroes, y'all, because whereas the stuff I'm doing is great, it's about video games. The stuff these people are doing is, you know, changing our schools and changing classrooms across the country. And I highly recommend checking it out. That's where my focus is right now, since I'm kind of moving along in the world further and further from the classroom.
Awesome. Well, you know, as someone who also works in education, I'm always happy to see those initiatives happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish they'd been around when I was a kid / high schooler, et cetera, because it probably would have made a huge difference.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just almost staggering to think about how much is unintentionally planted in us when we're in school. Even just like this conversation of diversifying the stories we see in our games, a large part of that is we're only shown so many stories in school, in our actual history. Like, how much different would it be if we just had more to work with? Like I said, I grew up in the Southwest. Even then, my American history started with the Pilgrims on the Mayflower way over there. It didn't start with the Spanish conquistadors or even the Native Americans that had settled the land long before that. It still started with a very limited view of history. Which probably influenced my thinking more than I realize.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. I have a lot of questions about the way we teach history, but I was once kicked out of my sophomore American history class for talking too much about the War of 1812.
So wait.
To this day convinced that we lost.
Oh, gosh.
So let me get this right. You were in a history class talking about history, and they kicked you out.
Well, no, I was arguing with the teacher that because they just like skim over the War of 1812 in the South, and they're like, and then we fought Britain again, and that was over. Wait, but wow. This says we went to war over a particular issue, and then at the end they burned down the White House, and we signed a treaty that didn't solve that issue.
Oh yeah, you sound like such a rebel.
That's us losing to Canada, is what that is.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. I can't imagine why we wouldn't want to talk about that in the U.S.
Us losing? That's impossible. Okay, well, you know, as we wrap up this... No, it's fine. That's kind of hilarious. Now I'm just thinking of a young, angry David in this class going, no, you're wrong.
Yeah, just flipping the table. We lost to Canada. I know the truth.
Now you have to have Kiva draw that. But, you know, as we wrap up this section of the show, I want to ask, you know, aside from being awesome and working with Geek Girl Con, what else is going on for you in the near future?
Well, I hope to stay awesome. That's top of the list. I'm going to be recording another episode of The Heroine's Journey.
Yay!
Pretty soon. Yeah, a lot of fun. By Elsie, check it out after you listen to this podcast and Latino USA. Highly recommend it. I think we were talking about, spoiler alert, we're going to be talking about Sarah Connor of the Terminator series.
Oh.
Yeah, she's really cool. And I was on there previously talking about Jane the Virgin, which we could have a whole other discussion about how awesome that show is. And prepping for Geek Girl Con, because, yeah, like you said, we have a panel coming up that's going to be awesome. called Stealing White Superheroes, which I'm pretty proud of the title. Not gonna
That's
lie.
That's awesome.
Should we let the mystery of that title linger, or should we say a little bit more about what that panel's gonna be about?
Well, you know, you proposed it, but you know, I am very excited to say that Catherine Cross will be joining us on that panel.
Yes. It's gonna be awesome.
You know, as the person who thought of this amazing panel, I will leave it to your discretion whether we want to dangle this at people or if you want to give them a little teaser.
A little teaser. You know, if that wasn't enough that we have these amazing voices on the panel, it's inspired by the comments from Michelle Rodriguez. I think it must have been last year by now. Like, time is just flying by. In her defense, she was probably intoxicated when this random paparazzi asked her about rumors of being cast as the Green Lantern. So, you know, that take her comments with a grain of salt. And she said, in short, that it was stupid and that we, people of color, should stop stealing white superheroes. So that was the inspiration for this panel. I'll let people, you know, research and generate ideas and then buy tickets and come to see us at Geek Girl Con to hear more.
Yes, and Geek Girl Con is relatively cheap, especially if you actually live in or near Seattle. If you don't live in Seattle, well, hopefully you can still come out.
Yeah, I'll be tweeting like airline deals because I know flying ain't cheap. And I, you know, we all have bills to pay. So hopefully if you're interested, you can make it. If not, I'm sure we'll be live tweeting it. Maybe we can have one of our friends like tape us and put it on YouTube or something. We'll try to make it accessible.
Yeah. So I'm super excited because my first time there and I get to be on a panel. So yay.
Yeah. It'll be great. Are you going to be on any other panels? Do you know, or?
To my knowledge, no, unless anyone listening who is also going to panel at Geek Girl Con would like me to join your panel. If you're talking about feminism, diversity, race, or racial issues in geek spaces.
Yeah,
or podcasting, or you know, podcasting. Hey, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I was going to say
you'll be a pro by then because it's in October.
Yeah, I feel very not awkward, but like I posted. So, and this is a total tangent, and then we can get back to like actually talking about questions because yay, we have listener questions. Mm-hmm. Someone asked me what my setup was. And I am that nerd that once I start doing something, I don't do it halfway. It's like when I tried to knit, I went out and bought all this yarn. And I can tell you most of that yarn is still sitting in a bin under my couch. But like I went out and bought a mic stand, all this other stuff. And so I posted it and then someone added me to a list they called Podcasting Pros. And I was like, thank you, but I'm so not a pro at this. This is like episode 6 that we're... Well, this is an episode 6, but at the time, I think we had just wrapped episode 6. And I'm like, I am so not a pro.
Oh my gosh, you should just own it. I think you posted also the stats of the episodes, and I loved seeing that. I think it's great that you are sharing this, because it can seem like, oh, other people do podcasting. That's like something that someone who went to school and majored in podcasting can do. And it's just so helpful to like break down those barriers when people are just open with like, here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm trying to do. Give us feedback. I think that maybe you're inspiring a whole new generation of podcasters. You don't know. You could be.
Hey, if I am, that's pretty awesome. Cause I was just like, hey, fuck it. Let's start a podcast.
Yeah.
Literally, that's how this began. I was like, hey, David, you said you know about audio. You want to help? And here we are, 8 episodes later.
8 good episodes later. Like, if you've been inspired to start a podcast because of Fresh Out of Tokens, you should let us know. Give feedback. Because I bet at least one person is thinking about it more because you're being so open about the process. I bet on it.
I hope so. Okay. God, I hope so. It's also kind of like, I hope so, but I'm also like a little intimidated by that. But that can be like a extra tidbit we record after we're done with the main show. Maybe tease folks with it because I have many thoughts about, you know, how people see you and what you are inspired by and what you may inspire in others. But that mm-hmm. could be like a whole 3-hour special episode unto itself.
Yeah.
It really could, because I'm sure I have a lot to say, too, about society and stories and all sorts of things. It all comes together.
Yeah.
I promise.
Well, for the next time, for the episode where we don't actually have a guest booked, we can record that conversation and see where it goes.
Oh, my gosh. But I'll be totally missing out. I would love that conversation.
Well, maybe you can come back.
Come back, yeah. We'll come back.
We'll come back after Geek Girl Con and talk about it.
Yeah.
And then David can, like, just totally have the chair solo, and we'll be the guests.
Deal. Sounds good. Put in my calendar now.
Awesome. Okay, so I don't totally derail the conversation again. We actually have questions, and
true.
I'm so excited. So I will let David take the first question, because the second question is, like, all about Hawk, and I have many flails and feels.
All right, Thane, 1982 asks, what are some of your favorite games and books, that's in all capital letters, representation-wise, parentheses, all ages, period, I want many diverse stories for my family, unparentheses. You had to give me the question with formatting, Tanya.
You're the editor.
I think that was great. Okay, I'm going to dodge the first half of that question by saying you could check out my list at comosedicenerd.tumblr.com, where I have a list of games where I'm trying to show, I wouldn't say the best representation, because some of those games make me feel uncomfortable. The Call of Juarez games, for instance, is something that shows Latino characters and Latin American settings, but not necessarily in the best light. You know, not feeling too great about potentially endorsing those games, but they still show those things. So they're on the list. So I'm dodging the first half. Books, oh my gosh. Favorite books, all of them. All of them are my favorite. Sonia Sotomayor's autobiography, My Beloved World, is kind of cheesy, but it's not like the greatest book ever written, but Sonia Sotomayor is very cognizant about that idea of being a role model and being a historical figure. And you can see that in this book. Like, she writes it not to, like, set up a campaign or to tell all or be salacious. It's very much like establishing herself and owning her place as a role model for Latinos and young girls everywhere. So I highly recommend that. I am halfway through Shadow Shaper by Daniel Jose Older, who you might know from Twitter. Because he's
I actually know Daniel, like, from Twitter, and have met him at WizCon.
Yeah. So he's such a great voice, and he also does a really good job of owning his voice as a potential role model and trailblazer, which is such a cheesy thing to say out loud, but he definitely is. And I'm only halfway through this book, and I can already say that I'm going to recommend it anytime someone asks me for book recommendations, especially YA book recommendations, because it's really, it's a lot of fun. And it's fun and smart. Like, so much about YA sometimes dodges, like, the politics or the intelligence of its readers, and this book does not. This book respects the intelligence of its target audience, and I really love that. And let me look at my list. Oh my gosh. How I Became a Nun by Cesar Aria? A-R-A-I-R-A. I totally butchered his last name. Is a really short book. It's like 100 pages, and it's a really good example of surrealism, I think is the right word. We're going to get emails about everything we got wrong about comic books, and I'm about to get a bunch of emails about how bad I am at saying genres of books. Because it's such a strange book, but I highly recommend it because it's, where is it printed from? I think it's from Argentina. And it's just a nice look at Latin American literature and how weird it can get, which I appreciate. And Sandra Cisneros, all of her books, especially for families, are really great. And one more, there's a collection of essays called Wise Latinas by Jennifer De Leon. And that's really good for everybody, but it's very much about, like, people finding their identities and, like, reconciling their identities as Latinas, educated Latinas, kind of balancing between two worlds that are very patriarchal and being at the nexus of that. Like, how do you find a voice for yourself when both sides of your identity are not valuing you as much as you should be. I could go on, but I'll stop there. I'll say, if you check out La Casa Azul, which is a bookstore in New York, if you like Google them, they have great book recommendations, and they have a huge focus on promoting Latino characters, Latino voices, Latino authors, and just really diverse books in general.
Awesome. Well, I don't actually have like children, so I don't have, you know, recommendations for young children, but I've actually got a couple YA and other author recommendations because, you know, I am that nerd that reads because I go to WizCon every year. But Nnedi Okorafor has some amazing, amazing books. Who Fears Death, Akata Witch, Lagoon, and Zara the Windseeker are all books that I read. And I think Zara and Akata Witch are more YA themed. And Nnedi, if you hear this and I'm wrong, please correct me. But they're amazing books. I totally devoured them. I need to pick up Lagoon, which is her newest book, but those are all really good books. They're just very rich and very, you know, full of folklore, and you can tell how much time she's put into crafting these stories and these worlds. And I'm just like, give me more books right now.
Yeah.
You know, and I have no shame in promoting my friend N.K. Jemisin, who wrote the 100,000 Kingdoms trilogy.
Which is a fantastic book.
Yes.
At least the first one.
Have you read all three books?
I have read the first one, and then I got distracted by William Gibson or some nonsense.
Okay. Well, 100,000 Kingdoms, which is actually out in an omnibus edition with an additional short story in the back. And then there is the duology of The Shadowed Sun and of course, Amazon totally flicked on me with the second one, which is the Killing Moon. So those are the two books that, you know what, she's going to yell at me because I don't think those two go together.
You mentioned a short story which made me remember that N.K. Jemisin has actually wrote what is probably one of my favorite short stories ever.
Oh, really?
With Non-Zero Probabilities in Clark's World a few years ago.
Oh, wow. I have not actually read that.
I will find it. We can put it in the notes or something. You should read it. It's great.
Yes. Okay, The Dream Blood, that is the other book I was trying to think of. And Killing Moon and Shadowed Sun are the two books in the Dream Blood duology. You know, they're not really YA, but they are good adult literature. And again, you know, I'm that person that I can get lost in a book, miss my stop. And, you know, they're just, her world building is amazing. And I'm not saying this just because she's my friend. I'm saying this because I was a huge fan of hers before I even got a chance to meet her. And she will yell at me when she hears this, I'm sure, because I pre-order her books and she's like, why? And I'm like, because you write really good books.
That's adorable. You know?
Yes. And she's awesome and amazing. So Sylvia, if you ever come to WizCon, you must come and say hi to folks.
Oh my gosh, I would just like pass out from all the excitement. I don't know if I could handle it.
Oh, you'd be totally fine. And then I have so many other book recs, which I may just throw in the show notes, will be like 10 miles long. But I will not hog all of the book recommendations. David, do you have other ones?
What was the criteria we were using?
Just, you know, good diverse literature of all ages, both games and books, because I believe Thane has a younger child, you know, and as the non-parent, I don't think any of us are parents, are we?
No, I just have a dog. I mean, I'm like a dog mom, I'm really into my dog.
And dogs are awesome.
Ah, man, nothing's coming to mind when, I think about, the things I read and diversity, which is probably a huge problem, because there's two authors I think of that I probably read the most, in that I've read at least one of their books more than once, and they're both white guys, and one is John Kennedy Toole, but I can't think of anything that's all ages.
So David, I'm going to charge you to take K Tempest Bradford's challenge, which is to to read more diverse books, and if possible, to not read books by old white guys for a year. So I will put that in the show notes. And, you know, listener, if you are going, wait, I do read just a bunch of old white dudes, I too will challenge you to take K Tempest Bradford's, you know, diversify your literary habits challenge, because, you know, it kind of blew up the internet. And, you know, I'm very proud to say the Tempest is a friend. And the fact that, you know, Neil Gaiman and other people were like, yeah, you need to read other books beside ours, was awesome. So I'm gonna take a moment to totally fist bump electronically Tempest, because I think that was awesome.
Yeah. And there's that hashtag too, we need diverse books. And so if you do take that challenge, which you should, you can check out that hashtag for the resources to make that a little bit easier of a challenge to take on.
I am glad that I gave you an opportunity to to plug that. I'm now just on Goodreads looking at my red books.
You're like, oops.
Yeah.
While you search for more diverse books, David, I'm going to have a moment of Dragon Age fangirl squee with Sylvia.
Yes.
And a friend of ours, and an awesome person all around, who also is over at the Heroine's Journey podcast, where I have been a guest, and Sylvia is going to return as a guest, Laura Krieger, via Twitter, asked, in all caps, mind you, so you, no one can see me, but imagine me doing Happy Kermit flail like in the GIF. Ask her about her hawk feels, because it was in all caps. So Sylvia, tell us about your hawk feels.
Oh, I'm fanning myself. I just don't even know where to begin. I think I almost, I probably cried. Let's not even be modest. I think I legitimately started crying in the beginning of Dragon Age 2, because I was very familiar with like, creating my own character. Sure, la-di-da, she's going to be awesome, she's going to be brown and beautiful, but that was the first game where your family matched you, and like, I did not expect that, and I was not ready for it, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful, because there are a lot of games that have that customization, but to have like your whole family around you all be brown, and they were like slightly different shades, and my family in every picture were all slightly different shades, from like super pale me to like really dark, I just knew I was going to fall in love with this character. And it was that was the beginning of a beautiful friendship between me and Hawk. And what I've been doing recently is replaying Dragon Age 2 with an eye to viewing this story as the immigrant story, a story similar to people like my mother, who were forced to leave behind everything they knew and go to a completely foreign place that was not only hostile and unwelcoming, but a place they didn't even really want to be in, and make a new life for themselves. And that's like Hawk's story. And I can't think of another game that shows that story. So I love her or him, because I don't love male Hawk as much. Sorry, but I love Hawk and the story around her and that whole game.
The way like they treat magic in Dragon Age, I'm just wondering how that Hawk is basically, no matter if you play one of either Hawk or Bethany is like a criminal for no reason. They got to choose just in that society all the time. I wonder how that like plays into what you're saying.
Yeah, I think the way I read the sibling relationship more was how the sibling either dies, spoiler alert for a game that came out like how many years ago. So your sibling relationship is really tense because they're younger and they're kind of in your shadow, and they might have that extra added layer of either resenting you because you're the mage or resenting you because you're not the mage. It's just not a good, healthy relationship. But I was really intrigued by how their attitudes towards Kirkwall changes over time. So there's like this spectrum of identity formation of immigrants where you reject that culture, you reject your own culture, blah, blah, blah. And your Hawk doesn't ever really assimilate into Kirkwall, but there are ways you can play the game where your siblings assimilate into Kirkwall. They become a Templar, they join the Circle. And I thought that Yeah, that was really interesting to me. More, I think there's people have written a lot about like magic and mages and Dragon Age, and they could probably answer that question better. But what struck me was how Hawk's identity is very stays in that like new immigrant mindset, whereas your sibling might reject Lothareen and Ferelden altogether and embrace this new like Kirkwall identity. And that just adds to the tension between you two even more.
Yeah. To be fair, Ferelden is analogous with the muddiest parts of England, though, so
yeah.
It's not that big of a loss.
Yeah, exactly.
Aww.
You can see why. Which, you know, is one of the arguments around assimilation. Like, a lot of people do reject their native cultures because it's not good memories for them. It's not something positive in their lives, and that's totally valid. And I just like seeing it in a video game. Like, why couldn't we have that in a video game and talk about it? Oh, there's my dog.
Actually,
your dog has Hawk feels too.
Yeah.
Thinking about it now, Dragon Age has a fantastic amount of loathing for its own settings.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of weirdness around. Like, I think it's weird that they keep saying Ferelden smells. Like, I'm sure everything smells in that world, but, like, what is wrong with Ferelden that everyone points it out?
Apparently, Ferelden smells like wet dog or something? I don't know.
Until about 200 years ago, discounting Rome, apparently our cities were just covered in, poop. Because we didn't have anywhere to put it.
That's what Ferelden is. That's Ferelden's problem.
Yeah, it wasn't until, like, the 1600s that we got rid of that again.
Wow, and it's interesting listening to you talk about this, and I've seen a few of the posts you've made about, you know, Dragon Age 2 as an immigrant story, because my quote-unquote canon Hawk is actually a self-hating mage.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never thought of it as an immigrant story, but I've kind of used this Hawk named Invictus Hawk, who is a mage and resents the fact greatly that he is a mage.
Mm-hmm.
Who then romanced Fenris.
Of course.
Because, and his brother's a Templar, so he's just got, you know, the full lineup of everything that will fuck with his head.
Yeah.
But to kind of deal with internalized issues I've dealt with as a young black person, not so young black person, and also just, you know, the way that you're treated, how that can help you internalize further issues you have with yourself and accepting who you are,
mm-hmm.
versus, or in some cases, you know, using that hatred you get from other people to then go, wait, there is nothing actually wrong with me. This is your issue.
Yeah.
And I've never actually, you know, I've vocalized it, but never in that way, because this Hawk has been very cathartic for me. I've written a lot of fic with both individually and with a couple friends about his journey to accepting that he is not this terrible person he has built himself up to be.
Yeah.
And quick backstory of this Hawk is, you know, he resented being a mage. He resented the fact that they've had to be on the run constantly because he's a mage. Malcolm's a mage. Bethany's a mage. And then, like you said, spoiler, since he's a mage, Bethany does not survive the opening mission.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with that guilt, because Leandra kind of piles it on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. Your mom is so an immigrant mom. Just like, I suffered through so much for you.
Yeah. So it was like, oh, wow.
That's fascinating.
I just have to say, it is amazingly different how the game is played when you're not me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, what was
your
Hawk?
I feel like, you know, circumstances, everything that creates the way we experience things has contributed to this, but I always played Hawk as the Hawk from the trailer and the cover.
Got it.
Because interesting. I don't know, it's basically, Dragon Age is one of those areas where I can specifically notice that it's probably made for me, in that their default character is exactly the guy I would have made.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, unfair to everyone else, but
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even get, like, a Femme Hawk in most of the trailers and promo material.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting, and I wonder now, kind of, like, you know, how people's personal experiences influence, you know, when they play Hawk or a Shepard in Mass Effect. And then when you come back, Sylvia, we really need to explore this, because now I have all these feelings.
Yeah, no, I want to ask you so much about, like, Fenris, but I understand that we probably need to move on.
Well, but we're actually going to segue into... Oh, I'm sorry, I cut David off.
I actually did want to say one more thing.
Sure.
The thing that was always... I always found fascinating about how Dragon Age 2 worked out for me is that in the story, if your Grey Warden in the first game is a mage, he or she is Hawk's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy I made in the first one looks like he's probably Hawk's cousin.
Yeah,
it
makes sense.
That's how similar it is, and it's ridiculous. All right, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine, because that, I mean, that's another thing where, you know, with Dragon Age 2, you go back to only being able to be a human.
Yeah.
But you could have, you know, more than one option to be the warden in the first game, so it's like, how does that play out when
if your warden in your save file is a human mage, it's your cousin, and your mom talks about it a lot.
Yeah, Cousin Amel... Well, because, you know, Leandra's surname is Amel.
Yeah.
So Sylvia and I will have to have, like, a Dragon Age convo. Maybe we'll get LC on.
Oh my God.
And we will have all the Dragon Age feels, which means it'll be, like, a two-part, four-hour episode.
It'll just be noises. It'll just be, like, just shrieking, you know? I got silent there because I was just, like, thinking about, like, oh, my gosh, how fascinating all the baggage we bring into our characters. And, just all the fun we could have with that. But yes, for a later time.
Yes. Or we can talk once we're done recording.
Yeah.
But, you know, this segues very nicely into talking about what we're all playing. You know, and as our guest, you get to go first. You already talked about playing Dragon Age 2 a little bit, but you are playing other things. So tell the folks listening what else is on your gaming plate these days.
Oh, my gosh. So I am still playing Inquisition. It's become embarrassing. But part of it is because I can't fit any other games on my computer, and I need to either invest in, like, whatever hardware you need to, like, make your computer bigger. Now we're gonna get angry emails about I don't know anything about computers.
But it's okay, I can take care of you.
And I am so in love with my Inquisitor, I refuse to uninstall the game, so I just keep playing her over and over again. So I'll just move on. But the other games that I've been able to squeeze in to what's left of my computer are Sunset and Discourse. I could chat a little bit about Sunset, but I think some other guests might have talked about it already. Is that correct?
We've talked about it, but those episodes have not yet aired.
Oh, okay. Well,
because I think Sharif talked briefly about it, but I know he's talked at length on his own podcast. So go forth and tell us about Sunset, because I still haven't played it.
Oh my gosh. I'm currently playing through it and recording a Let's Play for the very, very small Como Se Dice Nerd YouTube channel. So you could check that out. And part of the reason what attracted me to the game was I'm really fascinated by any game that gives me a look at, again, like, what my mom grew up in. So she grew up in El Salvador during, you know, the 1970s and 80s, when revolutions were happening, governments were falling left and right, and everyday citizens were just caught up in these huge, deadly conflicts. And that is not something that we see in games done well. Like, you have games like, I think Just Cause touches on this a lot, where you're going as the outsider into a place, into that setting, like fixing it, usually with a lot of explosions, and then leaving. Or Tropico 5, where you are the evil dictator and doing all that stuff. But what I like about Sunset is you are just a person caught up in something so much bigger than you. And that's what I am getting out of the game. So I'm not done with it yet. So maybe it is awful. I don't know. I think it's awesome so far. I like what I've seen so far.
Yay. Yeah, Okay, this may sound weird, but I wanted to play Sunset, but the idea of playing as a maid didn't appeal to me. But I have, like, weird emotional issues tied up in this game, and the fact that on Justice Points, they were talking about it in detail. And, you know, there's an option to have a romance with your employer, and that kind of squicked me out. And I was like, no. So I'm sorry, Tale of Tales, if me not getting the game kind of helped with, you know, it not doing very well. But, you know, hey, maybe we can buy the game for someone over at I Need Diverse Games. They can enjoy it on my behalf.
Yeah. That's totally valid. I think it would definitely make that uncomfortableness doesn't go away in the game. That's definitely a plot point. But Discourse, have you played Discourse or heard of it yet?
I have not actually heard of Discourse. Okay. What is it about?
Oh, well, I also have a Let's Play of Discourse on my YouTube channel. Shameless plug. Discourse
I know what I'm doing later.
Yeah, it's a super cute, fun game. You could play it in an afternoon from start to finish. Super easy. It's like a choose-your-own-adventure novel as a game. So it's all dialogue. You play Rita, who is a barista that has a... it's basically Lost, right? So you're just like a random person that ends up on a plane that crashes. And you have a cast of characters around you. I think it's like 5 or 6 characters. And it's just all dialogue choices. Like, do you save that person from falling to their doom? Or do you save that person from falling to their doom? Do you go hunting for food today? Or do you go hunting for water today? And the story just unfolds from there. And it's super cute. I love the way it looks. It has a really interesting, like, cartoony style. Rita, they never come out and say, like, what her background is, but she's brown, which I dig, and she's the hero, which I also dig. And it's pretty affordable, too. So that's my style of games. Is it cheap and interesting? I'm going to download it.
Hey, cheap and interesting is always good to hear. So we will include links to Discourse and Sunset in the show notes, so you too, dear listener, can go check it out. And I believe the Tale of Tales, while they've stepped away from making games, they do have a Patreon set up and are trying to still stay afloat, so we will try to include a link to supporting them as well. As for me, yes, dear friends, even at the length of this podcast and when it goes live, I am still playing The Witcher 3. I think I will never be done playing The Witcher 3 because Tarik Musa put in like 200 hours in one playthrough and I'm like an hour 12.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I did lose all my saves, so I had to restart, but I finally caught up to where I was before I lost all my saves. So I will start streaming that again over at I Need Diverse Games, since that was the whole point of me buying it, to, you know, play it and discuss it critically at the same time over on that channel. I picked up Mortal Kombat X because there was an awesome sale, and I suck at this game so bad. Oh, it was bad. I was just like, I used to be good at fighting games. What happened? I got whooped. And there's an interesting mechanic for those people that have not played Mortal Kombat X, or 10, if we're calling it that. You are allowed to skip so many fights in story mode.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
But you get a limited amount.
That's clever.
And I don't know if you have to buy more, if it like refills, and like after so many times you can then again, you know, skip more fights. But when you realize I have no more skips left, and this dude just totally kicked my ass.
Yeah.
I am not streaming this until I get better, so don't even ask.
Yeah. I saw part of that. Okay. I think it's Patricia Hernandez has a Twitch live stream that they do sometimes, and I saw the beginning part of it, and I thought, I would love to play this game without the fighting. Like, I just want to see these ridiculous characters and their ridiculous drama, but I don't have the patience to, like, fight at all through it. So I love the idea that you could skip the battles. I think that's genius.
Well, it's interesting, my gripe with it, because, you know, I grew up on Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, and the original Scorpion pulling out people's spines. The microtransactions that are now a part of the game really kind of put me off, and that's part of why it took me so long to pick it up, even though I'm a huge fighting game nerd. Like, I will still fire up the 360 and play Street Fighter 4. Oh, yeah, and I'm still on the fence about pre-ordering Street Fighter 5, mostly because I just want to be in the beta test. So yeah, and sadly, even though I put it in the show notes, I've not had a chance to actually play Journey yet. I pre-ordered it, I downloaded it. It is waiting for me, so once we're done with this podcast, I'll probably at least try to get in a little bit of play for Journey. But one of my friends, she was like, make sure you like this game, because it's very puzzly. While it's gorgeous, it's very much kind of roam around and figure things out. So it is beautiful. I was like, this is so relaxing. I could lose a whole day just wandering around in the sand.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I will stream that. I know Simply Andrea, one of our friends, is going to stream it as well, like do kind of a off-schedule, look, I got Journey stream, so by the time this goes live, we'll include a link to her Twitch broadcast. So yeah, that is basically what I've been playing, and I just downloaded Bastion, because it was like on sale for $3, or $3.50 on PSN. And apparently everyone can come out of the woodwork and go, oh my god, this game is amazing!
I've never heard of it.
It's an interesting platformer. It looks, you know, it harkens back to the old 2D platformer days, and it looks amazing, but I've not played it. And I'm like, I can't pass up a sale for $3.50. I have to get it.
Of course.
So hopefully by the time we record again, I will have actually played some Bastion and tweeted about it and maybe streamed it. And can talk about it at greater length. But I know that we have left poor David behind in talking about gaming, and we also have an article to talk about before we wrap up. So I will turn over to David, because those things are actually intertwined.
Yeah, those go together. Well, I've been I've been playing the Knights of the Old Republic 2 a lot lately. Or as it's written down here, Star Wars, Knights of the Old Republic 2, the Sith Lords.
Oh, gosh.
Because yesterday, I was actually playing it before, and the other day I sat down and Steam said it had to update, so I looked at, I went to Google, and I read an article by Austin Walker, and out of nowhere, they've apparently decided to port it to Mac and Linux and add, like, the Steam Workshop support and incorporate a bunch of the fan patches. Because oh. That's just what Disney is up to these days. So, cool. Yeah, and Austin Walker in the article goes over what all they did, and apparently he is in love with this game, which is probably a good thing I didn't know when I talked to him.
Huh, interesting. Maybe we can tweet at Austin and be like, hey, explain this article.
Yeah, that's so interesting that they... So, it's essentially like fans modded the game, and now that they're re-releasing the game, they're including those modifications as just part of the game now?
What they're doing is they've set it up with the Steam Workshop so you can subscribe to mods. And the first mod that they worked with, the modders they worked with, were the people who were restoring content because, like most Obsidian games, it had a deadline that was a few months too early.
Oh.
So there was a bunch of content that got cut out, and the ending was sort of weak, and apparently the modders have gone through and found everything they've recorded and constructed the scenes that they
that
could.
That is fascinating. That,
just
there
to
was,
rebuild the plot as intended, yeah.
Yeah, that makes me think of an earlier conversation I saw on Twitter about archiving video games, and do you think that the unfinished version is a less true version of the game than this, like, repaired version? Does that make sense? Like, some people would say, like, the unfinished version is the true version of the game, even though it wasn't probably very fun to play. That doesn't sound like a very fun game.
Well, no. No. What was... I personally believe in the... I subscribe to the death of the author when it comes to stories and media, so the unfinished version is equally as true as the modded version. I just think the modded version is a better story.
Got it. That's fascinating.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does make sense. I wish I knew more about this game and, like, the archiving of video games in general to, like, dive into it a little bit more, but I think it's... I'm definitely gonna check this article out.
Before... before Disney hired a council of nerds to discard the continuity and rebuild the continuity of Star Wars, these games were part of the timeline. So the protagonist you play in KOTOR 2 is, in the canon, she's named, Mitra? Or Mietra. I hope it's Mietra. That's a way cooler name.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's too bad that it's no longer canon, though, because there's so few, like, ladies in Star Wars that we could have used all the help we could get.
Yeah. The interesting thing about that, though, is I think a lot of people think of it more negatively than necessary. Just, it's not that it's no longer canon, it's that we don't know. It might be reincorporated in some other way. They're not going to throw away good ideas if it was one, I think. They're just starting over.
True. Right, because it's officially Legends now. So this is part of the Legends... I guess canon's not the right word, but it could be worked in. Maybe it'll pop up in Episode 7. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the game took place... thousands of years before the movies, and
okay.
It also, and I was actually also going to say it came out in 2004, so that was before the whole Disney thing.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, I have a few friends that are like hardcore into Star Wars, and they often will tag Tumblr posts with like, "No one hates Star Wars more than Star Wars fans."
Oh goodness.
Well, you know, I'm more of a Star Trek girl, so. I find it fascinating to watch all of this stuff kind of unfold from a distance. And cue angry fan rage coming my way. Oh my god, Star Wars is better. I've been on the internet a while. I just fully expect this to happen now.
I will say that both Star Wars and Star Trek are testaments to editing as a profession.
Yeah.
Because the prequels didn't have the same level of, you know, people in, you know, keeping George Lucas in within a certain frame.
True.
He had more power in the prequels and fewer editors, so he just got to do whatever bad ideas he had.
Huh. Interesting.
If you actually read the original drafts, there's a few of them out there. He went through a few different versions of this story, and they are mostly terrible.
Mostly terrible. Gosh.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I think in wrapping up this talking about KOTOR 2 and coming to Mac and Linux article, we are sadly at the end of our conversation with Sylvia, because I just want to sit here all day and talk about Hawk Feels,
Star Wars, everything.
Yes, but, you know, that just means you have to come back.
I would love that. That would be great.
And we just have to get Elsie Brown to come and have Kermit Flail and Hawk Feels with us.
That sounds beautiful.
Yes, so when you talk to her again, be like, okay, look, we need to get this on the calendar, like, now, so this can happen.
Yes.
Because Elsie is one of my favorite people. She's awesome. And enough, okay, one more gush, because she's one of the reasons I stick with the Dragon Age fandom, because there are some days where I'm like, oh my god, people, can we not?
Wow, that's such a huge compliment.
Well, she is. She, you know, and she also got me okay with Carver Merrill, which is apparently sort of kind of canon.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to touch that because, like, we've already said we're going to have a whole up episode about it.
I know. And I'm going to stop myself and sadly, you know, wrap up with thanking you so, so much for this amazing conversation. And I'm very glad that you stopped by the show with us. And I'm really, really excited to meet you in person come October and panel with you.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much for not just inviting me to this space, but even just creating the space and like featuring so many cool voices. I've loved listening to all the other episodes and learning so much about what people are up to bring like positivity in our culture, our gaming culture.
Yay, that makes me really happy. Yay. So for the folks listening, if you want to tell them where else they can find you online, how they can interact, and, you know, hopefully contribute to your awesome list, please give them your social media whereabouts.
Yeah. So you could find me at Como Se Dice Nerd on Twitter. And we're also on Tumblr. I say we, like it's not just me. It's definitely just me. But if you're out there and you're inspired to help bring attention to Latino contributions in geek culture, get at me because I could use some help. And like I said, I have a tiny, tiny YouTube channel also under Como Se Dice Nerd where I do some Let's Plays. And there I usually focus on smaller / more affordable games, doing little Let's Plays there. So that's where you can find me. I hope you find me.
Yes, we will tell people to find you and come talk to you and come help you. David, where can people find you?
Well, I'm on Twitter as Red Conversation. I think I said that at the beginning. I'm on Twitch at twitch.tv/red_conversation. I have a Patreon, patreon.com/redconversation. And that's most of where I can be found right now.
Okay.
I'm also working on some other things that I'll talk about later when I figure out exactly how to put them in public.
Ooh. Awesome. Well, that sounds mysterious. Now we need to know. So next time we record, I want to know about these mysterious projects.
That's really just the one, but...
Shh, you're not supposed to say that. You're supposed to, like, build a mystery. And as always, you can find me online at Cipher of Tyr. That's CypherOfTyr. On Twitter, Twitch, Tumblr. Not yet YouTube, because I sadly do not have a custom URL. But all of that stuff is in the show notes. And you can talk to us on Twitter at @OutOfTokensCast with the @ symbol or email us at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com. And you can listen to this episode and past episodes at freshoutoftokens.simplecast.fm. So thank you again, Sylvia, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. You always have a spot with us because you are awesome.
Aw.
Aw. And then next time you hear us, we will be joined by Jason Vegapedia. So I'm really, really excited to talk to him about alt games. So this is us for now signing off, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a wonderful night or evening whenever you are listening to this. Bye.
Goodbye.
Should I hit stop too then? I'll hit stop.
Here I go again, daydreaming of godless streets where all the heretics, who kings and queens are standing next to me. Maybe even me and Kyrie can go out for smoothie drinks, posing with our hair bows high and our phones look decent. The streets where the hair dye flows out so freely, all those pinks, blues, and greens, yeah, you know they got me geeking. OG Sama is my king, I hope you know that I am proud. We are coming for the top and we will wear those golden crowns. Damn, damn, damn.
Damn.
Damn. Y-E game for life, yeah, that's how we live it. Two-tone wigs, decadent nail witches. This is for my pretty maho, cave of a bitches. Girl, you know you're magical, ignore those lame-ass bitches. Except for like I guess, just how you want. Can see you getting in the work, so going fine. She got that body lining, candy linings in her closet. Saw it on the internet, so she went out and fucking bought it. Maybe even she will be as magical as Sailor Moon, warding off the evil that is lurking just outside her room.
Magical girls from life.
I've been waiting all year to shout out to the pretty, sipping on that glitter acid in all these different cities. Yeah, you know we winning, and I hope that you will say it loud. We are coming for the top, and we are never coming down. magical world tonight. Why you game for life? Yeah, that's how we live it. Bat rainbows, creepy cute little fishes. This is for my city, got Lolita buffa bitches. Girl, you know you're magical, ignore those lame ass bitches. Except for right that pretty dress, just how you want it. I can see you getting in the work of going on it. Julius the Robot and Oji-sama signing out.